This week in your parents' basement, we're loading up our PP7s and planting a bunch of remote mines all over the facility. From 1997, we are covering GoldenEye, which was released for the Nintendo 64 and developed by Rare. I'm Steve Greenwell, and with me is regular co-host and turncoat double agent, Todd Brisket.
We're both orphans, James. While your parents had the luxury of dying in a climbing accident, mine survived the British betrayal and Stalin's execution squads.
And our other co-host, he looks good in both a Russian parka or a black tie. It's Huell Hauser.
For England, James? No, for me.
You can reach us by email at parentsbasementpodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. If you like the show, be sure to subscribe to it on iTunes and give us some stars. Also, be sure to support the show by using our Amazon click-through link on www.ypbpodcast.com. Today's game is GoldenEye. The movie GoldenEye came out in November 1995, and it rekindled the James Bond movie series, which had been dormant over some licensing issues for about 10 years. It was the first movie with Pierce Brosnan, and it was well-reviewed, and it made about $350 million worldwide. Now, that normally doesn't affect the video game at all, since most licensed games are trash. But GoldenEye is a first-person shooter for the Nintendo 64 that is legitimately one of the best of all time. The single-player mode has fun gameplay and a strong story that's based on the movie, just kind of has extended movie scenes. And there are unlockable cheats based on how well you play the single-player edition. The real draw, though, was the split-screen multiplayer for up to four players. You could play on teams or head-to-head, and there were a slew of modes and weapon limitations to spice things up. Along with Mario Kart 64 and Super Smash Bros., it kind of created a murderer's row of multiplayer games for the Nintendo 64. Huell, why don't you start us off with a proper discussion of the game this week?
Well, when I fired up the game once again this week, from the opening music on, I was in heaven. This is probably a top 10, maybe even top 5 favorite game for me.
Wow.
Ever. Wow. I know it's no deep story-rich RPG, but this just has like almost everything you want.
No, I will say this, you know, you make that mention, but this game, by the fact it has the unlockables, all the collecting things,
sure,
you can do.
Sure.
It for me, it fulfills that OCD niche of an RPG game.
Yeah, I would say so. But obviously as a first person shooter, and not only that, but a console first person shooter, and like probably the only one that's actually any good. well, at least in this generation, the first one that's any
well,
good.
Well, in that
there's
generation.
There's plenty later, but the first one, this is really a groundbreaking game in a lot of ways. And I think it is, you say it is a licensed game and most licensed games are crap, but they really took the license and just ran with it. Mm-hmm. And just the production value from top to bottom, I think, really puts this game on top. Mm-hmm. It's like the developers actually cared, like, what they were doing, and it shows a lot.
Yeah, they basically did the best game possible they could with both a license and the fact that the N64 kind of has the boxy polygon kind of graphics.
Right.
You know,
it's still good.
This is very, very early on in the life of first-person shooters. Like, Doom only came out 4 years before this.
Wow, that's...
It is kind of crazy, yeah.
Yeah,
And Quake came out the year before.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. If you had asked me what the gap was between Doom and this, I would have guessed, like, 8, 9, 10 years.
Yeah, it is, like, it is 97, so it's crazy to think about.
But yeah.
I think it is the analog stick on the N64... really helps.
That really, really added it to
it. And it is maybe the best use of the four C buttons, in a game.
It is, at least, yeah.
Which has been copied since for FPSs, but, mm-hmm. I think just the combination of controls there, it lets you pinpoint aiming a little better and the strafing. Mm-hmm. That just really helps too. So it's just fun to play along with, like, a lot of deep gameplay that you don't see. You'd never seen in a first person shooter.
Yeah, that's
this. this game was an appropriate ramp up in the first person shooter genre, because when I booted it up the other day and started playing it, I started the first mission and I just walked around, looked at these guys, and they're just blasting away. It's like a stormtrooper in a Star Wars movie. He could not hit me. I was just standing right in front of him.
Yeah, the easiest difficulty is a little bit on the easy side, but it's pretty funny in the beginning, at least.
I actually kind of like that aspect of the game, that if you play it on the easiest or second easiest settings, you can blow through most of the game. When, you know, I was about 14, 15 when this game came out, and when I was playing it, you know, I kind of like that you could just blow through it in about, you know, an hour and really, really just have fun playing it. Well, until you get to the train stage.
Yeah, there's a few stages that are a little harder. I mean, the end one and the jungle is a bitch.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like, it's hard to see kind of a lot of stuff. And yeah, there's like automated turrets and whatnot. But yeah, a lot of the early stages are pretty quick.
There's a lot of locales in this game.
There are.
If it matches the movie or not. Because it's been so long since I've seen the movie that I don't know. Yeah. They obviously were in Russia, I guess, and they were in the snow. And,
yeah, I mean, as Steve mentioned, it takes scenes from the movie and makes like entire levels out of them. So it expands a lot. Like they were on a train, and he was in Siberia, like infiltrating that like giant dish base thing. Mm-hmm. But it's like a 30-second scene that becomes like a 10-minute level, you know, like you're actually going in and infiltrating and stuff like that. Oh, is that the sound effect drop, or was that just excitement?
Both. That was me.
Both.
We got some drops here. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's another segue. The sound design is incredible. Also,
yeah, this is another, I think I mentioned this last week. I forget what the term is. I think it's juicy. where the sound effects really give you like feedback.
Yeah.
Like all the gun reloading, the all that stuff.
Every gun.
The guys dying. Good stuff.
Almost every gun sounds different. Like it's impactful. You know?
Yeah, and you can definitely, you know, everyone kind of eventually develops their own favorites when it comes to the gun. Mm-hmm. Well, except the Claw. Everyone hates the Claw. And the Claw
is it's hilarious. That gun is.
It really is bad. Like there's
this is hilarious.
Yeah, it's like I use the Claw mostly in multiplayer because that's where you mostly get it. But yeah, I feel like I could not kill anything with that gun.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The first Siberia level, I think, is like the prolific gun in that stage. Mm-hmm. And then like there's like two guys you can kill for like the Deutsch D5K or whatever. And then once you get that, you're like, oh, thank God.
Yeah, that's a song.
He uses the same ammo.
Well, they're kind of like each stage normally kind of has a basic gun, and most of them are normally pretty good. Like the most common like assault rifle you get is the AK-47, which is perfectly fine for most of the game.
Excuse me, I believe it's the KF-7.
Oh, I'm
Soviet.
Sorry.
Yes.
The not AK-47 that you get is,
of course,
is a very useful gun, because you also get the zoom with that, so you can you can scout ahead a little bit easier than with the PP7. So,
and
that's another. I think it's an innovation in this game. I'm sure there's some game that came out before, but this is one that really, really brought to life the sniper rifle.
Oh, you know, yeah,
especially on the snow stage where you're just hunkering behind a hill and zooming in into the windows on their bunkhouses and sniping them off.
Like that and multiplayer. Like if you were really good with a sniper rifle, you could just off people.
Yeah. Man, Huel, you actually brought up a good point. Like,
what?
I know, surprising as it is, but especially for consoles, like this is the definitive first person shooter that kind of like made them popular on consoles, because I can't think of a game that came out that was a first-person shooter that was actually kind of good. Like, Doom came out for Super Nintendo, and it was notoriously pretty bad. And the same with, there's a Wolfenstein 3D for Super Nintendo and Sega.
Was there any PlayStation ones? I don't think so.
Not especially. The PlayStation and the Saturn were kind of, you know, they had first-person shooters, but they were awkward and kind of inferior to the PC versions.
Right.
The same games for obvious kind of reasons.
They were just ports. Like, this is an original.
Yeah, yeah. And especially the early consoles always lagged behind PC computing power. Like, N64 wasn't, it wasn't more powerful than computers of the time, but I think it did process things faster just because, you know, it was purposely not the most powerful machine. Kind of similar to how the Wii wasn't the most powerful system out there. It just kind of focused on its own little niche. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I don't think shooters on consoles really, like, this is the first game as a first-person shooter that just hit the spectrum. Everybody knew about it. Everybody played it. I don't think that happened again until, like, Call of Duty, the first one or second one.
Well, hey, I think as a console shooter, probably Halo.
Oh, sure.
Was
Halo,
before yeah. Call of Duty.
Was it? Maybe, yeah.
Well, yeah, anyway, like console Call of Duty, but I mean, yeah, Call of Duty was on the PC for a while, but I think Halo as a console shooter is probably the next breakout, really.
I couldn't even tell you which one of those two came first. I think Halo came first, right?
I'm saying even if Call of Duty was first, it wasn't until Modern Warfare that it was like a huge console thing.
Yeah, and I also feel like Call of Duty kind of, like, I've never played one of those games and I've never really had a desire to. Like, I feel like it's almost like GoldenEye kind of appealed to a bunch of my friends that really they weren't big gamers like I was. Like, they got really into GoldenEye, to a degree I don't think they ever got into with Call of Duty. I think one of my buddies, he eventually got an Xbox and a 360, but, you know, he played Halo a little bit and a couple other games, but nothing like GoldenEye, where fights would break out in the dorm over GoldenEye games.
Yeah, I think GoldenEye definitely had that advantage that it was a four-player game.
Should we move right into multiplayer? Because, like, that is the big elephant in the room. Because it's what this game was known for. And, I mean, I've read things, ironically, it was, like, slapped on at the end of the development cycle as just, like, this.
I did read thing. That, too. Like, 6 months before it was to be released, they just let one guy
let's do this. And it's insane because there's so much detail. There's so much you can do with it. There's so much customization and, like, little things that you can do with multiplayer. I mean,
you know,
well, from what I had read is that the level design that they didn't make them for the main storyline. They didn't make them linear. They just had some people go on set and, you know, take some pictures of the sets and then build an open-ended level around that. And then they would later on they would throw the actors on in the scripts and the scenes because they didn't have the story yet. So those transitioned perfectly into a multiplayer shooter because there's not a linear path on any of them.
So the level came first, and then the mission came after it.
Yep.
Like what you had to do within the level.
Right. That's why there's crazy. Some stages where there's like just completely empty buildings that have nothing to do with
that's
it.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. And multiplayer almost feels like like it could have served as like a debug or a testing area for them at some point because it's basically, you know, it's just these wide open areas and you can craft it so that you can use pretty much any set of weapons.
Well, they're not all wide open.
Yeah, some of them not wide open, but it's still like these kind of confined levels. Like, I don't know.
Like Brisky said, not linear. Like
there's a circular path. There's a branching path that both lead to the same place.
Except facility. That's a little linear.
Speaking of facility, did you guys know this is one of the greatest games in the history of mankind where you can crawl in an air duct and then shoot some guy in the head that has fecal matter flowing out inside and outside of his body at that point.
He's sitting. I didn't know it was both directions.
He's popping a squat on the party John there, on his throne, minding his own business, and James Bond just crawls up above him and pops his hat off with his PP7.
That was actually one of my fun things to do. It was fun to knock the hat off of him without killing him and then shoot him again.
Cause you could, that happened a few times where you would shoot someone.
Well, that's one of the awesome things about this game, and in multiplayer and in other modes, it actually tracks that stat is like how many hats do you shoot off people?
Yep. And it tracks like what limbs you hit, and like body shots and headshots.
Yeah, and your accuracy.
And this game might have originated the headshot for all we know, just because it tracked.
I think it did. I think it might not. I don't know if it originated. it's tough to say. It's all a blur, but it's one that made it obvious that if you shoot somebody in their head, they're going
to
die.
It brought it to the forefront because it did track it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there weren't many games that really rewarded like, area specific damage. Like Doom did not do that. Like,
no, it's just one big blob that you're shooting at.
Yeah. Like I think in Doom, you actually got more like for a body shot as opposed to anything else. Mm. And obviously Doom also didn't take into account like up down.
That's true. Like you can really aim that way.
Yeah. You could only shoot left or right. And I think, I don't know if Quake may have had more damage for headshots or just the fact that certain enemies were more vulnerable in certain places, that kind of thing. But you're right. It was a big mechanic of GoldenEye to the point where, you know, headshots would kill kill all of your body armor if you got hit in the head, which kind of didn't make sense, but at least they were trying.
And for the single player, I mean, shooting different limbs would cause different animations.
Yes.
Like there's probably like a dozen death animations alone. Yeah. But like you could shoot someone in the foot and they start hopping around. If you shoot someone in the hand, they're just like shaking their hand like ow. Like it's ridiculous.
I just looked up a game facts thread, gamefacts.com, you know, favorite site that I use. Mm-hmm. For my browsing. And they're of the opinion that this is the first person shooter to have area damage. But I think the first game to have area damage is Virtua Cop, which is are you guys familiar with that one?
Oh yeah.
It's that arcade shooter.
Yeah, is that the arcade one?
Yeah, but it's like an on-rail shooter. That's the first game to have area damage.
Oh. Where it like tracks it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I played Virtual Cop. That's a fun game. Although
makes sense. Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, it's kind of like it was the game before Time Crisis. Although I think they're made by different companies.
I think they're both Sega, actually, aren't they? No, and Time Crisis isn't.
I think Time Crisis is Namco. I have Time Crisis and one of the guns for PlayStation 2. It's awesome. Lot of fun with that game too in the dorms. But. Yeah, well, we mentioned multiplayer. One of the kind of neat things about multiplayer for GoldenEye is the fact that you can play as different characters.
Yeah.
Everyone normally have their favorite. So, Brisket, did you have a favorite?
I was always just like a civilian. But you know,
there are favorite.
I know what you're getting at is that the one multiplayer rule everybody had, no odd jobs.
Oh yeah.
Oh,
of
course.
It goes without saying.
Yeah, but you'd always have one friend who would wait until two or three other people entered their character, and then they would pick odd job.
Yeah,
because they were.
And you'd hit them and make them pick something else.
Yeah, well, you're a more violent man with your golden eye.
You can't do that with your Call of Duty because everyone's miles away. You have to be in the same damn room and playing GoldenEye.
Yeah. So
back in my day.
I always like to play as just like a civilian or a scientist or the Russian soldiers that were in the snow in their parkas.
I did like I actually wrote that down as scientist was a fun, but that kind of sucked because like you're a big white target because you have the lab coat on.
Yeah,
but the Arctic Commando and Boris I actually liked just because it was so stupid.
Is that
I have
the
track record
guy?
Of. No, it's the nerd with the glasses and the Hawaiian shirt.
Oh, Boris, yeah. Alan Cumming.
Alan, yes, Cumming. But
he tries.
I have a track record of picking the dumbest multiplayer characters.
He tries to shoot you in the single player, and he screws it up, and he can't do it. He pulls a gun at you on you at one point.
Well, he's just some dumb nerd.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, he literally pulls it out and goes, whoops, and drops it on the ground.
It's pretty good.
I would normally pick either Bond or Natalia.
You would pick Bond.
The boxy-looking lady in this game.
You're like the guy with the Tom Brady jersey.
Well, I am from New England. So
that's what I mean. I feel everyone like has Brady.
Tom Brady! Oh, I'll be James Bond, guys.
Listen, you know...
James Bond is like the coolest guy in the movie, man.
I mean, he's the main character, so I should...
No, he's like the main character, man. He's the one that kicked everybody else's ass, man.
So cool. He's so cool.
Remington Steele can fill out a box pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, is that Pierce Bronson?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he's related to Chuck.
Hey, did you guys know that the characters in this game, there's a huge selection of characters. Now, I would have picked James Bond had they did what they originally planned and put all of the James Bonds into the multiplayer.
Oh,
the Sean Connerys, the Timothy Daltons, they're planning to put all of them, but there is some kind of licensing issue. They had to pull them out.
Well, let me guess, you broke out your Game Shark and unlocked them anyway.
My action replay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I bet you got the most fun playing as George Lazenby.
Who doesn't? I thought you could eventually unlock them with the old Game Shark.
I don't know. Can you?
It's either that or like they found the models in there and you couldn't actually play as them, but they are on the cartridge. I'm pretty sure.
To kind of transition to some of the history on this game, since there are some quirks like that was one aspect that they were going to include a bunch of the different Bonds. Another one was they originally submitted an early version to Nintendo, like some concept art. This story came out in the past couple of days. The Guardian had a really good interview with Martin Hollis. He was the director of this GoldenEye game. It's in the October 26th edition. He revealed that the game grossed more than $400 million for Nintendo and Rare on a $2 million budget.
Wow.
It was also
quite a profit there.
Just a little bit of money. So between the video game and the movie, we're probably talking over $800 million in revenue. Which is, you know, an astounding amount of money even now. And back then, that's a killing for Nintendo. Originally, the game was also much more violent before some feedback from Miyamoto at Nintendo. It was definitely going to be rated mature, and it was going to include, like, gory headshots and that kind of stuff.
Full frontal nudity.
I don't know about nudity, but one of the suggestions Miyamoto gave them, which they turned down probably wisely, was that at the end of the game, James Bond would be visiting the hospital and shaking hands with all of the people he shot during the course of the game.
Oh, that is so Japanese.
just to show that, you know, there was no hard feelings.
Everything's fine now. You win. You win, James. Good show.
Yeah, so instead that's they tried to offer a compromise, which ultimately seemed to be taking. That's why there is kind of like a credits scene at the end with all the characters from the game to kind of imply that
it's not a real thing that happened.
These
people didn't actually die in this video game.
Yeah. This game was not a documentary.
Well, I was confused if you do kill someone, they slowly vanish into thin air like Yoda. So I thought they at least became Jedi ghosts.
That's just the visual effect, man.
Yeah. I mean, I can kind of see what Nintendo was getting at a little bit, because none of the Bond movies are all that gory until you get to the new ones with Daniel Craig, despite what Todd Brisket's children might be crying about just now. But
they don't like violence.
No, clearly not. The company, also Nintendo, offered Rare the opportunity to make a game based on the next Bond movie or to make a direct sequel to GoldenEye, but they declined despite the money involved. So after GoldenEye came Perfect Dark in 2000, which is kind of a spiritual successor to GoldenEye. So it kind of plays better in some ways, and many do consider it to be superior. Although it kind of has its own story and all that kind of thing. You play as a female agent, Joanna Dark.
Yeah, it's all fictional stuff. Well, not the gold, not that she is on, but it's like a new, story.
I think it is technically a superior game. It's just that GoldenEye, it's rooted in some pop culture.
Yeah.
And so it had all that going for it.
It was more prolific. I mean, it was known as like the multiplayer game, like everyone had it.
Yeah. And as I said to one of my friends who made that argument, like it came out 3 years later, it should be a lot better.
Oh yeah.
And also by 2000, like the N64 is kind of on its way out.
A little bit. And I think that contributes a bit to its, less popular stance. But I think when it came out, it was pretty popular. It just hasn't really stood up, probably because it was at the end of the console lifetime.
Oh, definitely. Just in terms of, sales figures, GoldenEye, the numbers I found suggest it sold more than 8 million copies, whereas Perfect Dark was more in the 1 to 2 million range, which is still, you know, still a hell of a game, but, you know, obviously not the runaway success that GoldenEye right. was. The last N64 game, by the way, which I'm sure we all remember, came out in August 20th, 2002, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3.
Wow. The last one.
Yeah.
For the N64.
I dropped off after two, so I don't know about that one.
Surprised it wasn't like Madden or something.
I mean,
cause they keep cranking those out for consoles like years after they're dead.
Kind of the issue with the N64 was the fact that there, you know, you could not really port games from PlayStation to N64, you almost had to make like an entirely new game.
Yeah, I've heard that.
One or the other, just because, you know, the N64 was still using carts, so it had way less storage space than the.
It also didn't have one of the big draws of Tony Hawk was the soundtrack, and all played off a CD on PlayStation. So porting those over, you have to, I guess, emulate the same music on.
It's probably just horribly compressed. Yes, yeah, horribly compressed tracks.
I don't see how well that would work out.
I don't think I've ever played a Tony Hawk game on N64.
Yeah, I never have either, so I don't know how it actually worked out.
Wow.
I'm curious to find that out.
Oh, maybe it could be a future game, because I'm sure many
the N64 people... Tony Hawk. Yeah. Specifically.
Specifically on N64.
We have talked about possibly doing like a potpourri episode at some point. That could be a fun one, playing, you know, the last games released for two or three different systems. We might have to put that one in the hopper. Maybe I'll have to nominate it at some point. You are not far off though with your guesses on the last games though. It looks like the fifth to last game was NFL Blitz. Sixth to last was Madden NFL 2002. Mm-hmm. Dr. Mario 64, Bomberman 64.
The ever popular Dr. Mario 64.
One of the last 15 games or so though, there are two pretty solid games in here though. There's Conker's Bad Fur Day, which was
the cult classic.
Yep.
Cult classic.
Classic.
Also made by Rare.
Yeah, yeah. Indeed. And Huel, you may have really liked this one, WWF No Mercy.
Oh, No Mercy. I probably put as much hours into as GoldenEye.
Oh, definitely. Like it had the reputation for a long, long time of being the very best the very best wrestling game.
Yeah.
Definitely. What was that one? Was there one called like WCW NWO?
Revenge.
I think that's the one I played a lot.
Yeah.
It was the same developer and it came just before No Mercy.
It actually came out a little bit earlier, about 2 years earlier, but right. it was the first good wrestling game for the N64.
Yeah. So I think they had WCW NWO was its own, and then Revenge was after that.
Yeah. They had
then they switched licenses to WWF and did No Mercy. Mm-hmm. No, they did WrestleMania 2000. That was actually before No Mercy.
Yes, you are correct.
And then No Mercy perfected it. This is my wheelhouse. Right in Yule's niche here.
Yeah. Well, and
N64 wrestling games.
And N64.
I did put a lot of time in those. I mean, I wasn't biggest wrestling fan. Yeah, I wasn't the biggest wrestling fan at all. Yeah. I watched it for a couple years back in middle school.
Weren't even wrestling fans loved that game because it was just so fun. And it was a simple system to get into.
Yeah. And N64 is kind of this weird system. Like in hindsight, it has a bunch of games that kind of held up pretty well. But it's kind of a shallow pool here. Like there are, I don't know, there are 15 or 20 really, really good games. And then there's like 100 or 150 games that are just mediocre to crap.
And that just seems to be the Nintendo standard. I mean, after SNES anyway.
Yeah. Well, even the NES just by default, because it was the only game in town that was kind of really popular at the time, that has over 1,000 games for it. But even by SNES, it kind of drops off to about half that size because the Genesis was a viable competitor. And then by the time you got to N64, it was also the system where Nintendo finally faced a kind of a worthy competitor in Sony, where Sony was willing to spend money and it was a big conglomerate that could, you know, play test and pivot, whereas, you know, Sega was always mismanaged and kind of dysfunctional. So the Saturn exited from the scene pretty quickly. Exactly.
Oh, poor Sega. But yeah, for N64, the top games are up top. Like with any game, and then there's a ton of bad ones.
Yeah, Mario 64, Mario Kart, just classic games. Smash Brothers,
Rogue Squadron.
Yeah.
Donkey Kong.
Donkey Kong.
I did do one other.
Banjo Kazooie. Rogue Squadron.
One other unique thing. For this week's show, which was I asked some people on my Facebook just kind of what they thought about GoldenEye. So here's some comments from them. Mary from Warwick, Rhode Island in New York City says, Slappers Only was fun for an occasional play. Did you guys ever do that in the old multiplayer?
Slappers Only. The key there was doing Slappers Only with License to Kill, which is one hit kills. That was fun. Then you just run around and you slap someone once and they're dead. So that was real fun.
Yeah, and invariably someone would forget to put that setting on.
Yeah.
But then everyone would be too stubborn to quit. So
you just quit immediately. we weren't down for that.
I also feel like Slappers Only was a decision that my friends and I would make after drinking. Like it was not... It was not a natural gameplay decision.
It's like when you're on like your 10th round of playing, you're like, oh, let's do a Slappers Only round.
Yeah.
My preferred game, my game of choice is Golden Gun Only.
Ugh. Only?
Only.
Can you do only?
So you have to be accurate, you have to be agile.
Well, that's the same as License to Kill.
Right. Same as License to Kill with pistols.
Right. Oh yeah, you could do License to Kill with pistols. There's a Golden Gun weapon set, but it's not only golden guns.
You get some of the other handguns, and I think you might get a club or one of the
of course
that goddamn club or the Phantom or one of the other submachine guns that are.
That's what I'm thinking of because I loved racing to the Golden Gun. Spawn location, grabbing it, and then just sniping everybody.
Because that was the thing with this game, like, the spawn locations for weapons were always the same. So, like, the special weapon in each set, whether it's, like, a rocket launcher or proximity mines, they'd always be in the same spot. So you play it enough, like, everyone knows what's going on, and they're all beelining. They're either beelining to the spot or ramping up, loading up on other weapons in order to...
Yeah.
Kill someone that got to there.
Getting the body armor.
Yeah, that too. So that was like a limitation of this game, but in a way it still made it fun.
Yeah, it was kind of a fun limitation since it kept, it kind of kept the action and intensity level high because you always between that and the radar, you could always kind of know where people were going.
Yeah. Yeah, like I was saying, like so many like multiplayer innovations were from this game. Mm-hmm. Like think of the end game rewards that everyone would get, like most deadly or
I completely forgot about those.
Yeah,
that's
like one little thing that just makes everything like that much more fun.
Yeah. Oh my god, it was always
like everyone would get like two rewards at the end, or not rewards, but like attributes or something.
Random judgments from the computer, like yeah. Poorest aim or something like that.
Yeah, like where's the ammo, or most cowardly, I think, is if you shot people in the back.
What about biggest dick?
That's the one I got the most.
Just
little things like that they put in there just escalated it that much higher.
Eric from Foster, Rhode Island says, the newer version for Wii was fantastic. The online play was like being in college playing, except I wasn't drunk and had to stop when it was time for my daughter's 2 a.m. feeding. played the new version. They have it for Wii, and it was ported to PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360.
I have not played it either. I've looked up some videos and some gameplay reviews, and it seems like it's a great port. They do replace Pierre Bronson with Danny Craig.
Boo.
Yeah, which...
But they get all the voice actors in there, though.
Well, that... I don't know why they had to replace Bond, since Pierce Bronson, I'm sure, you know, he would have picked up the phone. I'm sure he would have cashed that paycheck instead of starring in the Thomas Crown Affair 2 or something. he could have skipped out on the guest shot he was doing for Royal Pains that week.
Some other movie with just a dude's name is the title.
with his smug staring at you in the poster.
Oh no, I'll have to miss the Remington Steel reunion.
He was pretty good in The World's End. I'll give him that.
Okay.
I liked it.
Amanda from Brooklyn says Perfect Dark was better.
Clearly. We kind of talked about that. Yeah,
clearly.
It's a technically better game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's kind of hard to match that initial impact, like The Simpsons.
Oh yeah.
Perfect. So you're saying Family Guy is technically better?
Oh no.
No. I would say Futurama is technically better.
Hmm.
But it might not match that initial impact that The Simpsons had.
This is an argument for another day.
I know, and also technically, Futurama is kind of almost a different show than The Simpsons, which. The Simpsons is its own weird thing, especially.
Oh, yeah.
This next one is a longer exchange. Sean from Cranston says, my friend Pat was terrible and the facility was my home course. Pat from Attleboro says, Sean is lying. He couldn't find his way out of the vents above the bathroom. Sean added, I bought this tiny 007 shirt off of eBay, and whoever was winning for the day or week would sport the shirt. Hence the phrase, that's why I wear the shirt. It was so small, my belly button would peek out. Pat responded, luckily it didn't happen often since I always wore the shirt. So I can contest to this. When I was talking about my friends who would get into fights over GoldenEye, this is who I was talking about. And to this day, they, like, if there's an N64 around, they will magically kind of gravitate toward it and play some GoldenEye. I think my buddy Pat now has two kids, and I think he still has the N64 in his... I don't know if it's in his living room or down in his music room downstairs, but I'm pretty sure he still has it. So it sounds like he might be the ultimate winner here.
Man, you're saying about like going back to the N64. I haven't checked specifically, but this might be the first game we played besides Oregon Trail 2 that I actually have a working version of. I say working because if I do use an emulator, it is a game that I do own. I just need to get working.
You legally own it, yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
I don't. I just don't have
the system. ROM within 24 hours.
Yeah, I don't have an NES or SNES, so I can't play them, even though I own the cartridges. But I have a working N64. So. But yeah, this is. I think this might be the first one.
I also have an N64. I'm actually not positive if I have this game anymore, though. Just because, I don't know, at some point I lost some games in one of my various moves, and I think, you know, it was mostly the non-valuable N64 games I had. And while GoldenEye is a great game, it's not especially valuable. They sold so many copies that you can kind of get one, you know, for a semi-reasonable price versus, I had Ogre Battle 64 for a while before I
found it. Oh, there you go. Wait. That's a rare gem.
Yeah, I think I ended up selling it for like $100.
Nice.
And the same thing, I had a boxed gold copy of, the Zelda game, Ocarina of Time. So that also got me, I think, $75 or $100. Just because I was looking to declutter my life, man.
That is not something to get rid of.
is this a safe place to confess something?
I think you have confessed that you never finished Ocarina of Time.
Okay, good.
Or didn't like it or something.
Can it be both?
We'll have this talk out there. We'll discuss this later.
You have to send a letter to my priest.
Your parents need a talking to.
yeah, pretty much. All right. Well, Brisket, did you have anything else you wanted to add here about GoldenEye?
Yeah, I have a couple things. I saw that this is the GoldenEye is the highest selling game not developed by Nintendo for Nintendo 64. Just a little factoid.
Ooh,
and it's number three overall.
Nice.
Little factory. Number three overall behind, you can probably guess which ones, Mario and Mario Zelda. Kart.
Oh, no, not even Zelda.
Zelda doesn't have as wide of an appeal as
Kart.
Golden,
yeah, Kart makes sense. Yeah, Kart makes sense.
Yeah, Kart was the other game we would get into fights at the dorm room about. So,
yeah. I could do it.
Kart was my friend's battling out game of choice, not GoldenEye. Yeah. It was Kart. But my battling it out game of choice has always been Smash. Is that one takes skill, a little finesse?
It is a little bit more.
Yeah.
But there's more skill to Kart than one would think.
There is, but multiplayer.
It's easy to master. There's skill, but it's easy to master.
How dare you?
Well, multiplayer has like those junk mechanics though, where it gives the bad racers a chance by like, you know, giving them all the good items.
Spike shell.
Yeah, yeah, they get the good items.
The key is to get so far ahead that it doesn't matter.
Oh, look at
so
this
there
guy.
You go. Huh.
Look at Hugh Landretti over here.
Sure, I'll take a blue shell or two. I'll still win.
Oh, boy. Ooh.
What the hell are we talking about?
Well, okay, I got two more
team,
things.
Team, sorry. Okay.
Two more things. First one is this. Okay, and the last thing is, what is a GoldenEye anyway?
It is a satellite that can shoot into Earth and blow things up.
You seem quite disappointed.
I thought you
that.
Saw the movie.
I thought it was gonna be like some guy has a golden eye. His eye's made out of gold and it like shoots lasers. But it's just a satellite.
That's already been covered in Goldfinger, so they're not gonna do it twice.
Okay.
You seem disappointed that he knew the answer.
Yeah, well, it's like a laser shooting satellite.
I've seen the movie. I played through the game and I still had
no clue.
No idea until right now what a GoldenEye is.
I mean, there's levels where they're like, get the GoldenEye codes or copy the GoldenEye key or
All I read was, Mr. Bond, you need to pick up an arsenal of weapons and blow away Ruskies.
Or stop the GoldenEye from firing is one level. So,
Mr. Bond, by blowing away all these Ruskies, all these comrades, you will save the world.
Duh.
Well, that's good.
So that is your answer.
Yeah.
Okay. There we go. We solved that mystery.
It's an excuse to kill Russians. Isn't that good enough?
Yeah.
It's GoldenEye is Russian for MacGuffin. You said you had two more things.
No, that was it. That was it. That was number two.
Was that in his clearing of his throat for 30 seconds? I'm so glad you have sounds.
It is one of the... All right, now that's like a famous Hollywood drop, isn't it?
The Wilhelm scream is what you're thinking of?
Maybe.
It sounds kind of similar, but it's not. Scream. It is not.
Okay.
I think it is a commonly used video game sound effect, though.
A lot of these...
Yeah,
that... A lot of the sounds used, I think, were non... what are they called? In the public domain or whatever?
Public domain.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Public
domain. It's like non-private domain. There's a specific term.
Like secure rights or something. Of.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like licensed.
Unlicensed. Something unlicensed. Like that. Because I've heard a lot of these sounds pop up before.
The sounds you can use for free.
That you're not that...
That you don't have to pay royalties for.
Yeah.
Royalty. Royalty
free. Free. That's the one. There it is.
Ah.
I kept thinking non-denominational. I'm like, that's not correct. Royalty free. Yeah. A lot of the sound effects like that were... Yep.
Kiel, what are your thoughts here as we kind of wrap up on GoldenEye, I think?
Should wrap up because I could probably talk forever, but I think one of the big things that did make this an innovative first-person shooter was that the levels had mission objectives. I think that was a big change. So you couldn't just like run through and blast everyone and get to the end like a Doom or a Quake. You actually had to accomplish things, and you could fail a mission not even by dying. There are specific things you had to do.
You have to hack into the mainframe.
Yeah, or take the codes, or get a picture of the documents or something.
Or in the level I always found the most frustrating, you had to use your watch laser to open the door on the train.
Right, before you exploded.
Yeah, and by the way, it didn't matter. I always would run out of ammo in the watch.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it didn't matter that, by the way, I'm holding an assault rifle. Like, I can't just use that to blast the door hinges off.
Need a laser.
I don't believe that. I think I could have used the weapons.
Nah.
Or just give me a knife, man. Why do I need a watch laser? But no, the objectives did kind of add a neat little wrinkle onto things.
Yeah, because you're a secret agent. You got stuff to do.
Yeah. Go get this dossier.
Yeah. Rescue what's-her-face. Rescue blocky head.
Natalia. as opposed to the femme fatale Xenia.
Right.
Xenia.
Oh,
Xenia on the top.
And also, I mentioned this as we were firing up the show. I've never seen GoldenEye the movie, and I've never really even had the desire to, despite loving this video game so much. And I did not realize until today that Natalia in real life is actually like a hot Swedish supermodel. Like I just always associated her with the boxy redheaded ginger lady from GoldenEye,
the frumpy no necked lady.
I mean, I had no idea
she was a real person.
I mean, everyone kind of looks boxy in this game, but even I don't know what it is about her character design that she just looks even worse. Like maybe it's the weird camouflage outfit she's in for most of the scenes.
She prefers to be called voluptuous.
Clearly,
it's because she has no neck. Like if you look at it, it's like she's neckless.
She's nothing compared to that Xenia.
Oh no.
You know, now that's a woman.
She's all woman.
like full figured. Like to get up into her pixels. Tell you that right now, man.
Like to render those blocks.
Oh, man, we're not gonna win, you know, an image award this week either. After our showing in the mailbag last week.
The GLAAD Awards are going to pass us over.
I know. After the NAACP Image Awards, we were not qualifiers following last week's show.
We've got to aim a lot lower.
I know. All right. Kuehl or Brisket, anything else before we move on?
Nope.
All right.
Nope. Then. Probably move on. I didn't know I was supposed to answer. There you go.
Just giving it time to let it breathe. Mm. Then let's move on to the emails here. Brisket, did you get any emails this week?
No, my opening has still not been satisfied.
Huh. You know, I just noticed this, but when you say it that way, it almost sounds dirty.
Well, I mean, I guess I could take some 409 out there and clean it out.
Yeah, we should probably try to work on that for the next show, on being more clean and correct, like Perry Brosnan would be. Huel, did you get any emails?
Yes, I did receive one email, and this is from Scooterbutt 42.
Oh,
Scooty.
Nice to hear from them again.
Old Scoots.
So they write in, "Dear your peas be, I'm feeling a lot better than I did last week. I took something a friend of mine gave me and wasn't feeling like myself. Let's just say I don't consider them a friend anymore. I awoke later in a field next to a bloodied rabbit, not quite sure where I was. Luckily, I was able to hitchhike back into town and borrowed the driver's phone to write you this. As I was riding in a car for the first time in a long while, it got me thinking. What are your favorite vehicles in video games? Exhaustedly, Scooterbutt 42.
Oh, that's a good ask.
Yeah, there's a lot of options. That's a
good ask.
So.
Good ask.
This might be a cop-out answer, but sure. can I pick the boot from Super Mario Brothers 3?
Sure.
That's a fun vehicle for the one stage you get it in.
It's in a video game.
And I, you know, I do also like, you know, discarding racing games because, you know, I could just say Gran Turismo or.
Yeah, well.
Or, yeah, you can take your Honda Civics and shove off.
Come on, man. Isn't it so much fun to buy that PT Cruiser? Like, it's the one car you can afford at the beginning of, like, Gran Turismo 3, I think. Really soup it up and get it to 87 miles per hour, like I always want to in a video game.
I will say there was a, to go on a tangent of weird racing games, Beetle Adventure Racing from the N64 was actually really fun.
I've never heard of that.
It was based solely on the Volkswagen Beetle, the new one that came out, like in the late 90s or whatever.
Was it endorsed by Lindsay Lohan?
No, just Volkswagen. Volkswagen. No. But, I mean, it was a fun racing game because the level design was really cool.
No Herbie the Love Bug?
No.
Ah, so, too bad.
I'll give a shout out to that one. So as far as vehicles and video games, I mean, it is a bit of a cop-out to say, like, cop cars in GTA, just because it's fun to run around with the siren on, and they were actually one of the fastest, like, common cars you could hop into. And that made it pretty fun.
No,
so you were, like, out racing cops in a cop car, like, going, like, full speed. It was just zany wackiness.
No, I like them in a Grand Theft Auto 5. I'll take a cop car every once in a while.
Yeah. I think the one in 3, there was just something about it. This was, like, the first good Grand Theft Auto. But they're, like, yeah. That just seemed to go faster than, like, anything. They were ridiculous, and they could take a lot of damage.
It wouldn't surprise me if their top speed actually was higher, just to kind of give the computer a bit more of a chance.
Yeah, and that's what made stealing them more fun, along with stealing a cop car. But that was like my go-to.
Yeah, man, I hope no one takes this conversation out of context between your statement and my statements.
That'd or be Todd's bad. Mailbox statements.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to go. My favorite vehicle is probably the Metal Slug from the Metal Slug series. It's that little tank you hop into and shoot shoot some rockets out of.
Pew pew.
Pew pew pew. There's always classics. Like if you ask a random person on the street what their favorite vehicle in a video game is, they're always going to come up with one answer because they're all sheeps. They're all sheeple. No, they're going to say the warthog from Halo 2 or Halo.
Oh, yeah. All those sheeple with their halos and their Call of Duties.
Sheeple with their halos and their Call of Duties. Also, Twisted Metal, the Sweet Tooth's ice cream truck. Ice cream truck.
Yep. Oh, that's kind of fun.
Yeah. It's like, it's a vehicle-based game. It's not a racing game. It's a destruction derby.
Yeah, but I always found Twisted Metal kind of hard to play. Like, I feel like you would get down to the end of, I don't know, the end of a level, and it would just be you and one other truck, like, passing each other by, like, 20 times.
Yeah, like, I guess once, down to the last two was a little difficult.
Yeah, it was just a pain in the ass at that point.
A little bit.
Actually, I will say, what about worst vehicles in the game? And
oh, boy.
My nominee would be Borderlands. I do not like the driving in any of those games.
Yeah, it's kind of tough driver.
Yeah, I would say so.
I mean, it is also a little pointless because you can just run just as fast and get to wherever you're going to.
I would not say that, but
there's some
times you had to use it, and that was the most annoying.
Yeah, it's not really that much faster, and the thing is though, it's faster, but you also have like no control, and there's no cruise control option, and like I feel like especially I realized I was probably one of the few people to play this, but Borderlands the pre-sequel, like it was just a lot of driving and getting lost because things looked the same because they were reusing backgrounds obviously, and they add weird mechanics with gravity that really like
the wasn't that one on the moon?
Yeah, it was. But I feel like always the weakest part of any game is like stuff where you have to fight in midair or stuff where you have to fight in the water. And that game had plenty of stuff like, oh, just jump in the air and then turn around and shoot someone. And it's like, oh, shoot.
That's just like, that easy.
Yeah, it's like that's the last thing I want to do is like to be jumping and swiveling and looking as I'm falling.
Yeah, I just remember the vehicle controls were just like clunky and imprecise, and it was just made it a pain in the ass.
Yeah, unlike a lot of games, there's like if you turn right, you really turn right. Like you almost do like a hairpin turn.
Yeah,
you have to be kind of light on those controls, and it just doesn't control like any other racing game, and it feels out of place because you know the Borderlands series gets a lot of things right. So that's just like the glaring exception that that aspect is not so good.
Well, you were talking about the moon and reminded me of one. The first Mass Effect, was it called the Mako?
Oh God,
yeah, the Mako.
Yeah, because it was like a tank. It was like an exploratory little tank, but it also had rockets on the bottom, so you could like jump up over hills and stuff.
Oh my God, that game!
I love that thing.
How about this? I'll take it one step.
Like
as far as vehicles, yeah. I would say in Mass Effect, the Normandy is the best vehicle.
It's a spaceship, man.
Yeah, but it's a
vehicle. That's a whole other category.
It does awesome things. You ride around in it.
Scooter Bunty Scoot's clear intention was land-based vehicles.
Of course.
I mean, you would know. You are his favorite, so.
We will see if he mentions spaceships another time. Maybe we've inspired him if he listens to this episode.
Wow. Well, I only got one email this week.
Oh.
As opposed to half weeks when I've only gotten one email. Hey, guys, this is show number 27 for you. What game from 27 years ago do you like the best? Doki Doki Panic, Mega Man 2, Super Mario Brothers 3, or Zelda 2?
Ooh, this is a tough question.
It was a clear
two here. So who wrote that letter?
Oh yeah, that's a good question.
Oh, it's unsigned.
Oh wow.
We have a.
I was going to think Jimi Hendrix or.
Get some credit for your question.
We have a secret admirer.
Jimi Hendrix or Janis Joplin. Jim Morrison.
I'm just going to assume that it's Lisa Loeb because she's a cutie.
You can only assume that.
Yes. Well, I'm also going by who would be cute in 1988. So I feel like Lisa Loeb is a good answer.
She's probably like 14.
No, she's like 45.
He said cute. Not okay. A highly sexual being, a highly sexualized entity.
Now I'm going to have to look it up because otherwise the NAMBLA people are going to be after us too.
God, another organization. Wait, why would they be after us? Like angrily?
To give us props.
Oh, okay. To give us a plaque.
We certify this podcast.
Those damn NAMBLA guys are after us.
She's
too old.
Lisa Loeb was born in 68, so she was 20.
Okay, sorry.
When she was playing Mega Man 2. Mega Man 2 was probably the favorite of Lisa Loeb.
Oh for sure. She loved the challenge, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she loved
about collecting them weapons.
Yeah, I love Metal Man. I think I've seen her tweet about that. Hey, guys, if you ever want to know, Mega Man's my favorite robot master. Brisket, what's your favorite from that
well,
list?
Well, I mean, it's a very tough choice. You got a few good ones there. Actually, they're all good. I would put Zelda 2 at the bottom of that list just because it has some awkward gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
Out of those, my favorite would be Mario 3. It just has so much variety.
I feel like that's the correct answer.
I'm going to have to agree with that. I mean, Mega Man 2 is definitely up there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a tough choice, but I think it would be Mario 3.
Yeah, Mega Man.
So here's a weird question for you. Mm-hmm. I'm not remembering the timeline correctly, but Doki Doki Panic came out the same year as Mario 3, but Mario 2 came out after that?
Because that's a good point. Yeah.
I think they're getting a little cute with the timeline here.
Who, the unsigned letter writer or?
Yeah, the unsigned letter writer, because Mario 3 came out in Japan in 1988.
Oh.
And I think it came out in 1989 in the US, and I think The Wizard was also 89 or 90, something like that.
But wait a second, that still wouldn't make sense that.
Super Mario Brothers 2 came out in 1988 in September for the US.
Okay. It's making
so,
more sense.
So was
now.
Mario 2 was never released in Japan?
It was Doki Doki Panic. And they had the Lost Levels as Mario 2.
Doki Doki Panic came out in 1987. Then Mario 2 came out in, it looks like 1988.
So Doki didn't come out 27 years ago. It came out 28 years ago.
No, whoever wrote this in was kind of playing fast and loose with the years.
I guess. Yeah.
Could you reply to them?
Sometimes a blur to Lisa Loeb.
Just reply to them and tell them never to write again, please.
I really hope it isn't Lisa Loeb then.
They're destroying the integrity of our show by asking this question.
They probably didn't want to mention some of the other odder games that came out, like Dragon Quest III, also known as Dragon Warrior III. Ninja Gaiden came out. Which, as we've established, Huel has not gone through that hell that is Ninja Gaiden.
Why would I?
You could.
It's a good game, actually, but it's just hell.
Now, you know how Castlevania, like, you know, four or five of the six stages are fun, Huel?
Mm-hmm.
Now, imagine if there was, like, a game that was fun, but only, like, two of the stages were fun, and that's
kind of... Maybe, like, half of the first stage.
Yeah, that's kind of, like, what Ninja Gaiden is. Or like Ninja Turtles, like the first Ninja Turtles game, as I've mentioned before, the first stage.
Have you played that before?
I've dabbled in it. I've tried to rescue the dam from the bomb. it hasn't gone so well sometimes, and that's only stage two. So, you know, nobody's perfect. Least of all, Raphael. Raphael sucks. So, all right, well, Mr. Brisket, did you have anything else you wanted to share before we signed off here.
Mm. Once again, the pleasure was all yours.
Oh, that's modest. Huel, did you have any last words of wisdom?
Just remember, if you ever want to stop time, just look at your watch for a while.
That does sound deep and reflective to me. So
yeah,
I fully sign off on it. Now, here's a little snifferoo from the game we will be playing for next week's show.